These franchise values have become so increasingly high that they need some liquidity and they need more and more dollars at the table. This committee's been working on this for almost a year. So the league would be the last one to take private equity money, been very deliberate about it, but a lot of teams need this revenue as they think about big projects. These organizations have stayed in families for so long. And so to take this type of private equity investment is a big step for the league.
Abraham Edcourt on private equity coming into the NFL. We're going to talk about it with Ben Fisher of the Sports Business Journal on the Western Hotline. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Happy Wednesday as we get a little bit of the fallout or whatever, the effects of private equity coming into the NFL and how that might affect the league, if at all. We'll call this part of our segment, which is Building the Bills, and chat with you about that Building the Bills segment. So, in business of the Bills as well. Ben Fisher on the Western Hotline. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So this is, it's funny, like this was obviously big news, business news in the NFL, but it's not big business news in the sports world because it's fairly common and the NFL had kind of been late to this. So I guess first question is, why do you feel like the NFL was late to this as a league that's so valuable?
Well, I think the NFL is always a last mover on new trends across sports because they just don't have to do things. They're in so much better position that they can afford to sit back. They were slow to take new gambling sponsorships and to officially sort of bless sports gambling. And then when baseball and basketball started bringing private equity in 2019, 2020, the NFL has the extraordinary luxury of saying, well, we'd like to do this too, but what do you say we let the other guys do this for a few years just to make sure nothing incredibly stupid happens that nobody foresaw? So the NFL had the same basic calculus as all the other leagues. Just they don't need to move because everyone's so wealthy and everything's so stable in the NFL.
So when it comes to the rule that was enacted yesterday or voted on yesterday, by the way, there was one team, right, that voted against it?
That's correct. It's not the first time the Cincinnati Bengals have been on the losing side of a 31-1 vote in NFL owners. They just see the purpose of the NFL and their interest very differently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. Like, if you vote no for this, you can just can't you just vote no for yourself and not sell a portion? I mean,
right.
I understand you're a party in this league, but I don't know. If you're voting no, I can remember the Bills and the Bengals on a certain CBA maybe like 15 years ago. They were the only two no votes on a CBA proposal as well. So are maybe the Bengals are here just to spoil
you. The guy in your fantasy league that just likes to vote no, just to vote no.
Well, it is true. I mean, in the Ralph Wilson days, the Bills were similarly aligned with the Bengals and just being very conservative and just feel like there's no point in upsetting the apple cart. And we've gotten this far without private equity, so why take a chance? And, you know, that's not a totally invalid perspective, but it's increasingly out of touch with the people that really run the NFL.
Ben Fisher, Sports Business Journal on the Western Hotline. So what does this really do for the owners, Ben? The Bills are reportedly, it's been a couple months now that we've been, then we've heard that they are looking to sell a minority stake in the team. This would make it easier, no, for anybody that's trying to do that. Was it getting to a point where these franchises are just becoming so valuable that there's just only so many people on the planet that can put that check forward?
That's exactly right. It's such an extraordinary situation how for our entire lives, ever since the founding of pro sports, the only people that could own parts of teams or the entire team were natural people, you know, actual people you can feel and touch. And traditionally that was sort of like, you know, city fathers, guy who owns a big car dealership, or like, I don't know, the retired founder of a factory or something. But the business has gotten so much bigger than that. So now we're to the point now where if you even wanted to sell 5% of your equity to somebody else, that person is going to have to put up hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars for something that really doesn't actually amount to that much other than 5% of the team. So private equity bringing institutions in should make that market for equity much more liquid. And a team like the Bills, they're looking to sell off part of their team. It should be dramatically easier. A lot of people think this sort of deals will come together in the next couple of months.
The preferred partners, how did any of these equity firms, how did they get on that list? Because it's only a certain number of groups, correct?
Right. I try not to predict the news, but 6 months ago you would have said there'd be four entities that were pre-approved for this. I think we could have probably guessed three or four of them. There's three that are sort of specifically in sports finance. That's Arcos Partners, Area Management, Sixth Street. And then the fourth group is this almost like Avengers-esque consortium of the biggest household names in private equity, Blackstone, Carlyle, CVC, and a couple of others. Actually, one fund that's founded by the Pro Football Hall of Fame running back Curtis Martin. So these are people that are around sports and are not just random rich guys coming in. These people, generally speaking, know their sports and know the people at the top of the NFL.
If we're ranking things you can invest in, how would you rank the NFL? I mean, it prints money. It seems to have exponential growth year over year. Like, we talk about it in context of people pointing out exploding wide receiver salaries, and I like to point out the salary cap's gone up $57 million in 3 years. Like, this is a league that is operating. This league in the NBA, like, the growth has just been so big in television, and I don't know if there's an expectation for that to ever plateau or where we are, but as an investment vehicle itself, the NFL, to me, would seem like a pretty good one.
Right. I mean, as you sort of implied in your question, if there's any argument against this, it's that it's grown so much already that just almost mathematically speaking, it's going to be very difficult to maintain the pace of growth going forward. I mean, there are some small towns. I mean, Buffalo is a good example of it, how it would be an exaggeration to say the Bills have wrung every dollar they can out of the Buffalo market, but they're close to it. I mean, who in Buffalo doesn't have a jersey or hasn't bought a ticket that wants one at this point? So if there's any argument against this, it's that it's just it's bound to level off, that rate of growth. But that's a pretty weak argument. The NFL is remarkably rich and robust. And what really makes the NFL stand out as an investment vehicle isn't that the value of these organizations continue to go up. That's true in all sports. Thing is, in football, you spin off real cash money profits every year, 8-9 figures even, and that's the difference between what they bring in and that salary cap. As much as that salary cap's grown, they still make way more money than they have to share with the players.
If I were to look long-term here, you know, whether I'm a cynic or worried about something, do you think that this inclusion of private equity owning teams could increase the likelihood of work stoppages? Because if you're trying to wring more dollars out of the NFL, because now, you know, private equity firms own parts of teams, granted, it's going to be a small part. One way to wring more dollars out is to pay players less and to try and get that 50-50 split to be different.
Right. And I think that is a big fear that people have. And I think that the policy has been written with the intention of preventing that sort of thing from happening. I think, no doubt, if private equity teams owned a controlling interest in the team, 51% or more, or if they were even in a position where they could start at 30 and over time start buying out other minority owners to build up to 51%, I think you would be very correct to be very concerned about a negative impact on that, because we see it in other industries. Private equity buys your local vet, and suddenly it costs 3 times more to go get your dog checked out, and it's an inferior service. There's a lot of track records of that. But if they've written this policy correctly and limited private equity ownership to only 10%, it really is almost kind of just free money to people like Terry Pegula. And if anything, I mean, fans shouldn't notice this too much. And, you know, the argument from the salary cap perspective is, no, if there's more money in the system, it's easier to find a deal with the players. Things get really tough in a unionized environment when there's less money on the table. And I speak to that experience in 25 years working for newspapers and magazines.
Yeah. Is there, by the way, a reason why they capped it at 10%?
You know, it was a negotiation amongst the owners. There were some that wanted to look a lot more like the NBA and MLB, where the limits are 20 and 30%. There are others that didn't want to do this at all. And I think they figure 10% is a good place to start to see how this goes. There's been some reporting that they would like to increase that number, because if it's free money now, then why not have even more free money? But I think the lower that percentage is, the more they're confident that they won't, that the private equity guys will just be able to give them money and not have too much say over how the teams are run.
Ben Fisher, Sports Business Journal on private equity.
One more for me, Ben. In terms of like foreign investment, like that is not a part of this because of the pre-approved list. Is that something you see in the NFL's future? I know it happened to the Wizards in the NBA. I think it was the Qatari fund that invested in them last year. Is that something that you think is in the NFL's future, or even more in sports future? Or do you think we've kind of mentioned plateau? Maybe we've plateaued on that.
You know, I mean, it's almost a political question. I mean, I think when you think about the sheer money that, say, the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund or the Qatari Fund controls, it would be foolish of us to say that's never coming. These are businessmen. They want to continue to grow their businesses. And if there's willing investors with the sort of money that those countries can put on the table, you know, you got to figure it's going to happen one day, sooner or later. But as I said earlier, the NFL is in such a strong position. They deal from a position of strength. They never get their arms twisted into doing something. I think that's years and years away from the NFL at the earliest front, because they just see it as a risk they don't have to take yet.
Okay. Ben Fisher, Sports Business Journal, on the news of yesterday on sports, on the NFL teams approving private equity investment. Thanks, Ben.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I want to be too cynical on it, but the easy part of it for me, 31-1 is not a surprise. Hey, do you guys want to take just free seven-figure? Is it we're looking at seven-figure? Yeah. Free, probably eight.
No,
it
would be eight-figure. Eight, yeah.
Free eight-figure checks? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And also, this, I wonder too, like, it's, don't they treat it? They treat it like an exclusive club, right? These owners, like, we're in an exclusive club, and that's why you have to get voted in to be an owner in the league. It's why you can get voted out. Jerry Richardson got voted out as a Panthers owner. Like, they wanted him out. And I read a lot when the Commanders were for sale about Jeff Bezos and how Jerry Jones and a few of the other big, powerful owners in the league did not want him in the club, because he's going to walk in as the richest dude in the room. Not that the Waltons weren't when Denver got purchased, but that's one guy where it's like, nah, we don't want you in here.
Yeah.
And there's only so many people in the first place that can put that check forward. So if you're already at a limited list, and then you also don't want to just let everybody in that could have the money for it, well, then this is how you offset that. Hey, here you go. Sell 10% of your team for... Like I said, if we're approaching $10 billion evaluations for these teams, what's 10% of them going to be?
You're making me do math.
I know.
10% of $10 billion would be a billion.
It would be a billion?
Yeah. I guess that was pretty easy math after all.
That actually wasn't that hard. Yeah.
So I got something today in the mail about an offer to be, buy pre-sale tickets to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I didn't think I was actually...
Where is the Super Bowl this year?
Arizona.
Okay.
That's a guess. No, it's New Orleans.
New Orleans.
The logo is very much like, you know, the Florida Lees in the logo. It's
they
New
have
Orleans.
A logo that's not just generic silver?
It's pretty... It's LIX with the Super Bowl trophy, and it's just got the, you know...
All right, they at least put a pattern in the LIX.
Yeah, that's like the French Quarter kind of... So, preferred pricing.
Super Bowl Licks, is that what we're going to call it?
Okay. No?
Like, it spells a word.
It's true.
Yeah.
Next year is LX.
Okay.
Anyway, LAX. Yeah.
So you got an email. And
They should have put LIX in LA, and they could have had the LAX, the Lixlax Super Bowl.
Okay.
Anyway. Sure. So, yeah, email. Pre-sale tickets available for Bills season ticket holders. Use your promo code BILLS. All right. Click buy packages. Game day ticket packages. Let's take a look, Joe.
Okay.
Payment plans available. Club 67 official ticket. Choose your exact seat. Pre-game party on campus. Chef curated cuisine. Premium open bar. Music entertainment. NFL legend appearances. Buy ticket and experience.
Okay.
Starting at $7,350 per person. All right. Let me do that.
Starting at. Yikes.
What's promo code BILLS going to get me off on $7,350?
It might get you below
like
seven.
A commemorative cup?
You think you're just getting something?
No, I mean, it's definitely going to... the promo code, in theory... The other part you could buy was... it's
a
already,
copy of Madden.
It's already sold out, which is just Club 67 Premier. It's a ticket and pregame hospitality. It looks like it might be less, but that is already sold out. It doesn't even list a price.
Okay.
But I'm seeing now that with the Super Bowl tickets, pre-sale Super Bowl tickets beginning, the Cincinnati Bengals must be furious. They've got to be so upset that anyone is planning on buying tickets to a game in the future.
Yep.
Joe Mixon is beside himself. What do you mean they're selling tickets? Bengals revenge tour to the Super Bowl. I'm glad somebody still gets that joke, because I'm going to hold that grudge against the Bengals forever.
It's a joke that needs to be made. It should be made forever.
It should never die.
Yeah. They were motivated to beat the Bills because the Bills and the Chiefs were selling tickets to an AFC Championship game in a neutral site, which, by the way, I forgot that almost happened. We were a game away from that.
We were a game away.
From a neutral site AFC Championship
game. In Atlanta.
Yeah. It would have been half Bills fans and half Chief fans.
Yep.
How would our Chief narrative have changed had they lost in Atlanta? You can't beat them on the road, you can't beat them at home, and you can't beat them in a neutral site.
How would the narrative have changed if cameras didn't catch the wide receiver simply upset about the fact that they were getting hammered by 17?
Yeah.
What would that offseason have been about?
It's true. It's the only thing
from that game that gets remembered.
Yeah.
Outside of the Bengals scoring on the first drive with Ja'Marr Chase being wide open. That and Leslie Frazier's defense on like a third and four or something.
Oh my gosh, they were like 10 yards off.
Yeah.
That clip was shown on ESPN over and over and over for 2 years, in part because it was the only clip like it. Right?
Yeah.
It was the only one. That's why you saw it every day. Because it was the only one. They just played it on a loop. And now they're talking about, is Josh Allen the most overrated quarterback in the NFL? I'm sure Bills fans will definitely take this well.
Yeah.
As ESPN talks about this
Meanwhile,
for the rest of the day.
You posted a Twitter poll. This is where we're gonna have to have a conversation here about this.
So this is based on our little Fitz trivia from last
hour. Ryan Fitzpatrick Jets season.
Yeah, so Fitz with the Jets in 2015, the year that they lost to the Bills in the finale, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, the closest he ever came to making the playoffs, and he lost it that day. That season, he had 3,900 yards, 3,902 to be exact, 31 passing touchdowns and 15 interceptions. And then I asked you, would you take that for Josh Allen?
This year, would I take 3,900 yards, 31 touchdowns and 15 picks?
And you said no. I said pretty outright.
I said no.
Right. Even though, just pointing this out, if you want to put the most positive spin on it that you could, 3,900 yards, 31 touchdowns, 15 picks. That is Allen hitting the over on his betting total for yardage. It is Allen throwing for more touchdowns than he did last season and throwing for fewer interceptions than he did last season. Just saying. You could put a positive spin on that stat line if you wanted to.
No, you can't.
No?
You cannot put a positive spin on Josh Allen throwing for 3,900 yards. No, you cannot.
Who threw for 3,900 yards last year? He's got to throw for 4,000 every year?
Here's the group of quarterbacks that threw for more than 4,000. You tell me. Here's your cutoff.
Okay.
Matthew Stafford threw 3,965 in 15 games. Let's call him the 4,000-yard club.
Okay.
We'll do yards per game. This is a good way to do it.
Okay.
Right? The 4,000-yard club. I was going to say, like, Jordan Love was also...
4,000 yards is going to be like 250 a game, right?
Yeah, okay.
Give or take.
Here are your quarterbacks that threw for less than...
Mayfield threw for 4,000 in 17 games. He averaged 237.
Right. Here's your quarterback list under 4,000 yards. You tell me if Josh Allen lands here, we are okay. Sam Howell, Derek Carr, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Geno Smith, Gardner Minshew, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson. Now I'm under 3,000. Bryce Young.
Yeah. I mean, it would be more of a Lamar-type season, wouldn't it?
If he throws for fewer yards than Baker Mayfield... If he throws for fewer yards than Baker Mayfield, I do not want to hear anybody talk about how well everybody ate. This is the best, arguably the best or second. He's the second best quarterback. We're not allowed to say the best. He's probably not the fine.
Yeah.
If the results you get out of that are 3,900 yards,
mm-hmm. It would just mean they're running the ball more, right?
I know.
Which. He could get his accolades, by the way. Like, Lamar is going to run for more than Allen is, but Allen's the closest. Lamar won the MVP throwing for 3,600 yards.
Mahomes won it throwing for 5,250.
Okay. Does he have to be more like Lamar this year than like Mahomes? They have to run the ball and have him run it more than they ever have? I don't believe that, by the way. I do not think they're going to run the ball all the time. But to me, if you told me they have 3,900 yards, 31 touchdowns, 15 picks, I think...
What's their record? He throws for 3,900 yards against the schedule they have. What is their record?
Well, see, that's a tough way to do it because couldn't I argue, well, they were good running the ball? He wasn't playing from behind all the time.
You could argue that.
Like, yeah. Winston threw for 5,100 yards that one year we talked about earlier. Why? Because he was always behind.
That's right.
So
did Mahomes throw for 5,250 because he was always behind? Actually, maybe some of it. His record when down 10 is good. Just right
well,
now.
Typically, no, right, though, with Mahomes.
Allen throws for 3,900 yards. What's the Bills' record?
Mahomes threw for 5,200 yards 2 years ago
yes.
in 14 games.
What's their record?
Where 10-7? 10-7?
Great.
I can't get lower. I don't think I can ever get lower with him with 10. If you tell me he's healthy for 17 games, I don't know how I get below 3,900 yards over 17 games, though. I will say this. This would be the thing that would be the scariest for me, is that would be an average of 229 passing yards per game. And that number almost sounds scarier to me than less than 4,000. If you told me he's throwing for less than 230 a game, that means there's games in there where he's not throwing for 200. So one of two things is right then. They're either great running the ball and they're always winning, which kind of seems hard to believe, or, man, they're really bad at wide receiver.
Well, again, like, if you're only throwing for 220 a game, why do you have the stud quarterback? Most of this is built on, I have one of the best on earth, I should lean into that. And this conversation is, actually, if they lean away from him, maybe they'll win more games.
Which, by the way, really hasn't been true yet.
Never.
Because they've been ahead more than anybody in the league in the last 5 years, right? How many games the Bills win by blowouts? It's more than the Chiefs.
Yep.
And he's never had lower than 4,000, right? I don't have his numbers in front of me. I don't think he's ever had lower than that. Not since he took the giant
right,
step.
Since he became the guy.
Yeah.
803-0550, 1-888-552-550. I saw Ja'Marr Chase. Like, Zach Taylor says he's gonna play week one.
He said he's confident he'll play week one.
Yeah, and they're getting closer and closer to a deal, it seems, where that would make him the highest paid receiver in football. Is he going to pass Justin Jefferson?
He could. Yeah. That's another deal that would go through before Ayuk signs, by the way, if Chase signs.
803-0550.
What day do you have to get to before you think Ayuk wouldn't play for the Niners?
I mean,
week one.
It's a good question.
Like, if we show up here on Monday and he still isn't signed, are you betting on him not playing week one?
Well, he's missing game checks at that point.
Yes.
Which
the only guy that's really done that is Le'Veon Bell, at least recently.
And Vincent Jackson maybe did that.
Okay, sure. That sounds right.
In Tampa, I think. He was with the Chargers, then the Bucs.
Yep.
One thing to note, you think that standoff is good. Hassan Reddick's standoff is more significant.
Oh, yeah.
He owes $5 million in fines. And you can't waive those fines.
And I think I've heard, did he tweet this maybe like in the summer, or maybe someone reported or something, that he told his agent that everything that I lose in fines, I'm adding to my ask.
Yeah, good luck.
So basically, if I owe $5 million, the Jets have to add $5 million to their contract offer. So that sounds like that's not going well.
No, not going well at all.
Yeah, that one I would bet right now he's not playing. No way, right? The way that sounds, that he's playing week one. That one sounds like it's not happening.
803-0550. We'll get a break in. 1-888-550-2550. We didn't get you the big bettor that bet against the Bills. We can do that. Talk a little Sabres Jumbotron action, too, because we got our first look at that. Sabres tweeting out pictures of that. Jeremy and Joe on a Wednesday on WGR.